This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to talk about, and we'll explain to you what it's all about, your rights dealing with corporate script. We'll get a definition of that in just a minute. My guest is Joseph Rideout, Manager of Consumer Services for Consumer Action, the nonprofit National Consumer Advocacy and Educational Organization. I want to give you the website because I think it's a very, very valuable thing that you would have if you want to find out about consumer issues, www.consumer-action.org. www.consumer-action.org. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the San Mateo County Bar Association. Additional funding is provided by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and the Family Law Section of the State Bar. And Joe, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me back, Chuck.
Very, very nice to have you here. What do you mean by script? What's this all about?
Well, corporate script would encompass a family of things I'd consider like gift cards, frequent flyer miles are probably the two most popular ones. Also, the use of virtual currency within video games that you buy with actual money. But the overall similarity is that this is a virtual kind of currency that's issued by a company, and this virtual currency is not accompanied by the same rights that consumers would expect with real legal tender. And it's important when you're talking about things like frequent flyer miles or gift cards to understand that you're not going to be protected if something goes wrong or if the company just decides to change its policy with those instruments.
Well, let's talk, if you don't mind, for just a minute about gift cards. What can go wrong here? Now, obviously, if you get a gift card for a company and the company goes bankrupt, that's a problem. What else can you see going wrong there?
Yeah, I mean, that is certainly something that a lot of people, if you had Sharper Image gift cards or some of the video rental store gift cards, you found out one day that they were worthless. Mm-hmm. In the case of Sharper Image, the stores were still open, and they started refusing to accept the gift card. So that's one obvious way that things can go wrong. But there's a larger issue, too, in that even if the company doesn't go bankrupt and you're able to use it, there's a question of flexibility, or what economists would call fungibility, the ability to exchange a unit of something back and forth with each other. You are changing, if you say buy a $50 gift card to American Apparel, you're taking $50 that spends anywhere, and you're turning it into $50 that only spends in one particular store. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are attendant problems if the store goes under or if you move away from where you can use those things. You're giving up an immense amount of flexibility, and there are also problems that are less foreseen that can go with gift cards as well. For example, in many states, gift cards are subject to escheatment, which is when the state considers them abandoned property and claims them for their own general fund. In California, there's a law against the state doing this, but in many states, in as little as 3 years, if you haven't used the entire balance of that gift card, the state can take possession of those funds and leave you with nothing, even if you intended to use it in the future. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of limitations with that.
Joe, do you generally, I mean, it's not unusual at Christmas time or someone's birthday or some special event that someone, a consumer, will buy a gift card for like a department store or something like that and give it to someone. What recommendation do you have? I presume it's not that don't buy and don't give gift cards, but what recommendation do you have for people with regard to gift cards?
Well, I mean, the reason that so many of us give and receive gift cards, you know, partly it's a triumph of marketing for the companies that pump these things out, but it's also it's offering consumers a great deal of a time saver in terms of what to purchase for someone if you don't know exactly what they want. It's a very lazy way to give a gift, but it's also something that can take care of the matter at hand very quickly and save you a lot of time. It's not a very personalized gift, but it does meet, you know, a basic level of giving that is socially acceptable. Now, it's not the best gift, and you are trading some of the value of the money you're actually putting into the gift. But, it's just make sure that they actually want to use the store, and the store is something that is expected to be around for a while. And, consider other alternative gifts, and don't just default to a gift card, because that's what companies want you to do, and it's not always the best financial decision.
I know you want to talk about frequent flyer miles in just a minute, but I want to ask you a question. This has been brought in. A consumer has asked this question, and I don't have any knowledge about this, but the question is this. What about Bitcoin? I hope I have that right. Bitcoin. Is that a consumer scam? Do you know about this?
Well, I know I would not consider it a consumer scam, nor would I really consider it corporate scrip. It's, you know, corporate scrip is something like one company designs a currency that you can use with that company. Something like Disney dollars. You can, you know, if you take money to Disneyland or other Disney properties, you can convert real money into Disney dollars. And if you remember to exchange them before you leave the property, you can convert them back to U.S. dollars, but you can't use them anywhere else but Disneyland, Disney World, or Disney Cruise. Bitcoin, by contrast, this is just something that, you know, the libertarian community and the tech world has promoted as a kind of currency in its own right, not corporate scrip, but as an alternative currency to what they consider to be, you know, the problems of more common currencies like the U.S. dollar or participating.
So what do you do with Bitcoin? I've never even heard of this before.
Oh, well, it's an electronic currency that, that has very limited places that you can spend it right now.
I see.
But the thought is that it will one day be accepted all over the place. A lot of the people who subscribe to Bitcoin think that it's a way to prevent you know, the government from devaluating your money or other things that a government can do to get it. There's also a great deal of privacy. It's almost entirely private. For that reason, it's been criticized for being used in illegal transactions. The use of Bitcoin can't be traced in the way that a credit card or face-to-face with cash could be. So it's it has, unfortunately, that aspect going for it as well. But Bitcoin is it's one of those things where the value of Bitcoin jumped almost 100 times in a year or two. So it's gotten a lot of media attention, but it's an electronic currency that's not corporate scrip in the way that frequent flyer miles or gift cards are, but it is it's an invented currency that's supposed to be widely circulated.
Very interesting. Well, tell us, what's your concern about frequent flyer miles?
Well, I'm not necessarily criticizing frequent flyer miles. They can be very useful for people. I personally find them useful, but it's another example of corporate scrip in that the company really makes the rules. It's not like you have money in the bank when you have, say, 100,000 miles or more in your frequent flyer account. Or if it is money in the bank, it's like money in the bank, you know, pre-FDIC insurance, where if the bank goes under, you could be left with nothing. And, you know, even more so, the companies write the rules with frequent flyer programs. And the general thing we try to get across is that frequent flyer programs never get better over time. They only get worse. And that's due to a couple of things. One is that companies devalue their frequent flyer miles. And every carrier does this. And four have done it just in the last 6 or 7 months. United did this, Delta. American did it with no warning back in April. And Southwest did it a couple of months ago, too, where they made buying an identical flight, you were required to spend about 16% more of their rapid rewards currency in order to redeem this. But you know, you look at how much you need to redeem in terms of frequent flyer miles to cash in on a given award, and it only gets worse over time. United, for example, if you wanted to get a coach class to Australia right now, it would take you 140,000 miles round trip, or 160,000 if you wanted to do one of their partners. Now, until late 2006, you could fly business class round trip to Australia for 90,000 miles. And this is an across-the-board phenomenon with all the carriers. There's small devaluations going on, sometimes multiple times a year. And for consumers, what it means is that you don't have the same kind of rights with frequent flyer miles as you do with other kinds of currencies you might be using as payment instruments. And it makes sense to use these miles as quickly as possible because you can get a lot of value out of them, but the longer you wait, typically the less value you're going to get.
Let me throw something out at you. I have a credit card. I'm not going to mention what bank it is that's connected with one of the airlines. And every time that I buy something with respect to this credit card, at a certain point, I am earning frequent flyer miles. In other words, I just by going to the supermarket and buying my groceries and using my credit card, At the end of the month, there's so much. And as I understand the way it works, I get frequent flyer miles because of all of the credit card use I have had. So what is it, if you know, Joe, what is it that's going on here between the bank, the credit card company or the bank, and the airline, that the airline, how does the airline make any money on this if what's happening is I'm getting essentially free frequent flyer miles by my purchases at the supermarket?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And the answer is that the banks actually make a lot of money off this. U.S. and Canadian airlines earn about $10 billion in revenue from selling frequent flyer miles to banks every year. And they sell them for about almost 1.5 cents per mile, it's estimated. And they sell these miles in bulk to banks. Banks offer them back to their customers when you spend using these co-branded credit cards, or they offer very generous sign-up bonuses to people who sign up for credit cards, the banks thinking that you can become a loyal customer for many years if they give you a big enough, if they bait the hook well enough when you sign up for the card. And really, I think consumers are living in a golden age for accumulating frequent flyer miles, mm-hmm. particularly when it comes to signing up for credit cards. It's very easy to find sign-up bonuses of 50,000 miles or even more for American, United, Delta, et cetera. Mm-hmm. In terms of spending them, that's more of a mixed bag, and it can be very challenging for users of these miles to build an itinerary they want because as more and more frequent flyer miles come into circulation, and we now have well over 10 trillion unredeemed frequent flyer miles out there, it becomes too many people chasing too few seats, it can be very challenging. There's more information than we've ever had before about how you can do it, but it can be time-consuming and it can be challenging depending on how flexible you can be.
If an airline, in terms of consumer actions study of this, if an airline believes that there are so many frequent flyer miles out there that we as the airline are really not going to make any money by honoring these, can an airline just cancel the opportunity for someone to take a trip using the frequent flyer miles?
They couldn't, under normal circumstances, bar people from accessing any kind of rewards. But, on a practical level, they have capacity controls where they'll only make available a very limited amount of seats, especially in the first class and business class cabins, depending on what airline you're talking about, so that it can be, on a practical level, next to impossible, depending on how long of a time horizon you're looking out at and how many people you want to get into the trip. The good news is that it's easier than ever to accumulate these things, especially if you're signing up for credit cards. But the dilemma for consumers is, can you spend them efficiently? Because airlines, they can print money, basically, with this stuff. And it's worth a heck of a lot to their bottom lines. United, for example, last year listed liabilities for frequent flyer miles of $4.9 billion in their SEC findings. That's a heck of a lot of frequent flyer miles.
Oh my.
But companies also build in assumptions that between a quarter and up to a third of these frequent flyer miles will never be redeemed. So they can be very lucrative because the airlines sell them to the banks. The banks entice customers to get new credit cards, and they make money off merchants through interchange fees. But not all of them get used, and a liability of $4.9 billion for United, for example,
incredible,
poses a very big temptation for the company to devalue those miles and essentially wipe out a lot of those liabilities. And that's why airlines continue to devalue these miles, sometimes in very small ways, sometimes in more significant ways.
In my role as a deputy DA for San Mateo County, I had in the last few months recently complaints that came to me from the Better Business Bureau regarding people who had paid for or had been given gift certificates for, let's say, a skin conditioning business that was both in San Francisco as well as in San Mateo. Unfortunately, the business has filed for bankruptcy. And therefore, these gift cards, whether one bought them him or herself or was given a gift, are essentially worthless at this point. What thoughts do you have about generally about people either buying for themselves or buying to give as gifts, gift cards to, let's say, small businesses? Do you have any thoughts about that as opposed to, let's say, large businesses such as, you know, we're talking about frequent flyer miles, and in a way that's a kind of like a gift card, I suppose.
Yeah.
But what thoughts do you have about that?
Script. Yeah. I mean, it's another example of corporate script, and the dangers that consumers take on, you know, if you're using corporate script instead of real money or legal tender. You know, everybody wants to support small businesses and local business, and we should.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about a small business, we all know the statistics about how they're more likely to fail than
what are the statistics? What are the statistics?
There's nothing wrong with giving them as a gift certificate, but everybody should understand that that gift probably should be used sooner rather than later, even compared to other gift cards.
What are, Joe, what are the statistics about failure of small businesses? Can you give us an idea on that?
Well, you know, I don't have them on the tip of
okay,
my paycheck,
right.
But, you know, you hear about how most small businesses fail within 5 years, and sometimes it's a very large majority. You know, so it's great to support your local businesses, but, you know, the gift recipient should understand that this probably is a sign that you should use that card even more quickly than otherwise you would. Now, in terms of bankruptcies and frequent flyer miles, usually when a large carrier fails, like TWA when mm-hmm. it went bankrupt and liquidated and American got it, those frequent flyer miles, they didn't just disappear. They went into the new program, and consumers didn't really lose anything. But what's interesting is that that has not always been the case. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about smaller airlines, members have lost all their miles when airlines went bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And these would be
mm-hmm.
ones like Midway, Braniff, or National. These are small airlines, but they had their own frequent flyer programs, and mm-hmm. Consumers lost all their miles when the airline went into bankruptcy. There's no reason that couldn't happen mm-hmm. if a large carrier went bankrupt and in a bad enough situation. It hasn't happened except for these smaller airlines, but you should just be aware that, you know, even though you may think it's as rock solid as legal tender, it's anything but that. And, you know, it's good to use these frequent flyer miles sooner rather than later.
Sooner rather than later, yes, of course. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about consumer issues. A little bit later in the program, if you are with us during the entire hour, we're live in the Bay Area for an hour. We're live on the Internet for an hour at www.klw.org. If you are with us in the second half hour, I'm inviting you to think about if you have been ripped off by a scam or a misrepresentation and you would like to call in and discuss it on the second half hour of the program, I'll give you our phone number, obviously, in a few minutes. My guest is Joe Rideout. He's Manager of Consumer Services for Consumer Action, which is the nonprofit national consumer advocacy and educational organization. It does wonderful work. It was established in 1971, has a terrific website in case you'd like to see some of the stuff that they have put on the website, which are a lot of good information for consumers of what to look out for, or what you can do if you've been ripped off in a certain way, or what you need to do if you want to avoid problems. And the website is www.consumer-action.org. It's all one word, no spaces, www.consumer-action.org. Also, I want to let you all know that next week we will do our Call a Lawyer night. And you can join us then while I'm doing a live program on employment law. I'll give you the phone number right now for Call a Lawyer night. This is, if you're not familiar with this, this is when we have a number of attorneys who are in the conference room here at KALW Public Radio, usually 7, maybe 8 attorneys, who will talk with you off the air while I'm doing the live program, California time, but from 7 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, May 28th. And that number, if you'd like to join us for Call a Lawyer, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. That's for next week. I know you want to talk about class action lawsuits in this first half hour, Joe. What's your concern?
Well, we have an announcement that on our website we're bringing together a lot of information about class actions that consumers may be eligible for. It's at consumer-action.org/lawsuits. And what we're trying to do is make people aware of class actions against companies they may have done business with or deadlines approaching if they may be a class member so they can submit a claim form under the deadline. Because the reality is, most consumers never find out whether they're the member of a class until it's already too late. And, people have heard the cliches about, lawsuits where people get 37 cents. Those certainly do exist. But there's some that are actually represent a very nice piece of change for consumers who can participate. There was one very recently that was closed to claims just a few months ago where anyone who bought a device with an LCD screen over like a 6 or 7 year period. So that's any computer, any flat screen TV, anything, and as many computers as you had bought over this very long period of time, you were eligible for $25 per device. So many Americans would be eligible for $100, $200 or more if they were buying a lot of computers or TV screens or monitors. It was very, not very well publicized, and not as many consumers submitted claims, even though they might have been eligible to receive a couple hundred bucks in many cases from this. So we're troubled when consumers don't get made whole by these, class action lawsuits that they're a party to, even though they were cheated by companies. And so we're trying to make this as widely available as possible, and we allow consumers to search by date so they can find out which ones are coming up the soonest, and they can search by company and other factors to find out what they're eligible for. And because some of them are very wide-reaching that would include tens or even 100 million Americans. There's one we have featured right now on the page that involves the manufacturers of DRAM lawsuits, which is this DRAM memory components, I should say. This is a component that goes into devices like computers, printers, video game consoles, MP3 players. So it's a $310 million settlement, and anyone who bought any kind of computer or printer or video game console or MP3 player between 1998 and the end of 2002 is eligible as a member of this class, and you can fill out an online form. That's a heck of a lot of people, and you don't even necessarily need to provide receipts or anything like that.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, it's a lawsuit that involved price fixing by manufacturers.
Oh, my. Wow.
Like Hitachi and Samsung and Infineon. They got together and they artificially, fixed the prices of these things. So by the time that you, the consumer, bought your device at a Best Buy or a Circuit City or what have you, you were paying more than you should have. And so now you're eligible for at least $10 of a in money back from this lawsuit. So there's other examples too, some more obscure, but this one is a good example of one where countless Americans are eligible for, but few may actually submit claims, even though they could recover a small amount of money.
On the Consumer Action website, talking about class action lawsuits, if you find a particular company that you think you might have something coming to you that you had some transaction with it, does the Consumer Action website actually give you the form that you can fill out, print out, and then send to the company, or does it tell you who you can get in touch with?
No, we actually link to the genuine claim form that in most cases you can directly submit online. You don't even have to print out anything. We have it chopped up into different sections. There's one where there's a settlement and it's open to claims. That means that you can click through a couple of screens, get to the online claim form, and probably submit it right there without having to print anything up. Very easy.
Wow.
And there's another section that deals with lawsuits that are important to consumers. There may be a settlement but no claim form available, or it may be reaching the final stages but the final settlement is not in. And another section that talks about class actions that only recently closed are still in the process of dispersing funds, but if you didn't submit your form before the deadline, you no longer can.
Ah, okay. Well, that sounds
but
like
we've participated in lawsuits against corporations that have cheated consumers in the past, and we always felt bad that a lot of consumers that were affected never got their share of what the lawsuit brought to them. It's sometimes companies issue things called CyPre awards that go to nonprofits. We have received a couple of them ourselves, but they come about when not enough consumers come forward to claim their share of the settlement fund as a member of the class. And while we certainly appreciate money going to our organization, we feel bad for the consumers who didn't get their share. So we're trying to do our best to broadcast out to people that this is a place where you can find out about class actions that you may be eligible for. Lawyers don't do it. They're going to get their attorney's fees no matter what kind of advertising they throw out.
Oh, sure, of course.
Make people aware of it. And the companies certainly don't want to advertise class actions. That makes them only look worse in the press and is bad for publicity. So there's a real information void when it comes to this, and that's why we designed this page at consumer-action.org/lawsuits so that consumers can recover some of what they might have been cheated of.
How recent is it that this page has been set up by Consumer Action?
It's been live for a couple of months now.
Has it? Well, and that's very significant. Very significant.
Yeah,
very
we hope
good.
People get something out of it. And
very good.
Anyone who knows of other consumer class actions, please, you can email us at info@consumeraction.org.
info@consumeraction.org, did you say?
Yeah, .org, yeah.
Okay, very good. Well, I think we have nearly come to the end. Could you, in half a minute, if you don't mind, and may not be possible, there's a bill in California, SB 962, a kill switch regarding cell phone theft. In half a minute, can you tell us something about that?
Yeah, this is Mark Leno's bill. It's something that addresses the problem of cell phone theft. Cell phone theft is now like a $30 billion global industry, and about 60% of the crimes in San Francisco, 70% of the crimes in Oakland that are property crimes involve the theft of a cell phone. The way to stop this from happening is to implant a device in future cell phones so that consumers can disable them remotely if that phone is stolen. That would undermine this market in stolen phones and would protect consumers not only financially, but would protect public safety as well. Carriers are fighting this bill, like Verizon, AT&T, the other wireless companies, because they prefer to sell loss and theft insurance. That's an $8 billion industry in itself, is cell phone loss theft insurance.
Joe, we're going to have to stop here. The statewide version of the program, we've come to an end of it. I want to let you know it is just about 7:28 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. Joe, I'll come back to you and let you finish what you were talking about, but I had to bring this to an end.
That's
fine. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're continuing the live portion of the program. The number, if you'd like to call in with a scam that you may have been victimized by, is 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. Again, I want to let you know that next week is our Call a Lawyer night. On the air, we'll be doing a program on employment law. Off the air, you'll be able to talk with one or more of attorneys who are here for Call a Lawyer night from 7 to 8 p.m. That number, 1-800-525-9917. My guest on this segment of Your Legal Rights is Joe Rideout, Manager of Consumer Services for Consumer Action, which is the nonprofit national consumer advocacy and educational organization. And I encourage anyone who has been a victim of a scam, join us. Let us know what you've been scammed by, and maybe Joe has some ideas, maybe I have some ideas, or maybe you can tell us how it was resolved, hopefully to your benefit. There are some things I want to let you know about that are very critical to some of you. Tomorrow, that is Thursday evening, May 22nd, from 6 to 8 p.m., the nonprofit ERA, Housing and Economic Rights Advocates, which is in Oakland, is having a free legal clinic on dealing with debt collection problems, how to access affordable credit and credit reporting. This is something they've started, actually, I think it's starting tomorrow evening and will be on the fourth Thursday of every month at ERA with some different clinic. It is from 6 to 8 p.m. in Oakland. If you are interested in this, I'll give you a phone number and the name of someone you need to contact. The name is Maeve, M-A-E-V-E, Elise, E-L-I-S-E, Brown, B-R-O-W-N. She's an attorney. She's the executive director of ERA, which is the abbreviation for Housing and Economic Rights Advocates. The phone number, if you want to jot this down, 510-271-8443, 510-271-8443, extension 307 for Ms. Brown. Also, I want to let you know about a couple of things for next week. The San Mateo County Law Library will be having an immigration appointment situation on Wednesday evening, May 28th, from 6 to 8 p.m. They have some openings still, as I understand it, to get free legal advice. If you're looking for some advice regarding immigration issues, that's next Wednesday evening, May 28th, from 6 to 8 p.m. If you are interested and would like to book a 20-minute appointment, here's the number, 650-363-4913, 650-363-4913. And if you would like to learn something about dealing with contractors, if you're thinking of having something done to your home, your apartment, or whatever it may be, the San Mateo County Law Library will be having on Thursday, May 29th at noon, a free presentation. You can bring your sack lunch. These have been things they've been doing. These noon presentations have been things that the Law Library has been doing for quite some time. This is a situation where Attorney Richard Pierce will discuss tips on how to select a licensed and qualified contractor, negotiate a clear contract, believe it or not, and how to prevent and resolve disputes with your contractor. If you'd like more information, that's that same number I gave before, 650-363-4913, or you can go to the Law Library's website, www.smclawlibrary.org, smclawlibrary.org. All right, if you have a question, a comment, a concern, something doing with a scam or some way you've been victimized as a consumer, please join us, 1-415-841-4134. And we have, it looks like, Adrian, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be on the line. You've been doing this for such a long time, and it's always a great program.
Well, thank you.
We ended up buying some appliances because we were doing a remodel, and we qualified for a rebate, and it was a pretty substantial $100 rebate.
Mm.
Instead of getting a check for that rebate, I got a credit card, a Visa, which I have been trying to use. The card theoretically has a substantial amount of money on it.
Yeah.
And it consistently gets refused. I would say it's accepted maybe 40% of the time, maybe less. So first of all, this is a rebate that is becoming extremely difficult to actually get my money out of.
What do you think the credit card should have in it? How much credit should it have, Adrian?
About $450.
Okay, and what are the excuses that are being given to you when it is not being honored?
I tried to use it in a restaurant, and they said this is a prepaid card.
Mm.
If there's not enough money on it, then we refuse it because we assume you're going to put a tip on top of the check. And, you know, the check was maybe for $25 or something.
That sounds strange.
I finally started asking people, why is this being refused?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they said it's a prepaid card, and a lot of businesses don't accept it.
That's very interesting.
But I'm not allowed to use it to put money into my own bank.
Mm.
I'm not allowed to use it as an ATM, even though it has a PIN. Mm. I'm not allowed to get this money off of this card anyway, except using it to spend this money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thereby also giving the credit card company a cut of whatever it is that I'm buying.
What is, if you don't mind, what is the name of the credit card company?
The company that I bought the stuff from and that says on the card is Bosch, the company, the appliance company.
Yeah.
B-O-S-C-H.
But who issued the credit card?
It's listed as a Visa.
It is?
Yes.
And have you contacted Visa about this?
There's a website that you can do something about, but it's not like a regular credit card with, not like my own Visa.
Well, let me get some comments from Joe. Joe, are you aware of something like this?
Yeah, it's that I understand that is very frustrating, and that's the way that a lot of rebate companies have gone in the last 5 years or so, like away from paper checks, and they've restricted your flexibility by giving you these prepaid cards because it's, you know, they save a little money, they get a deal with the credit card company, but you don't have the same flexibility to just put it in the bank account and be done with it. Instead, you have to go through this laborious process of spending it, making sure you don't lose track of it, in which case you'll probably be out of luck altogether. There are a few things you can do to try to get rid of the money on the card and transfer it. It's more of a headache than you should have to deal with, but if you're sick of this card, there are a couple of solutions I can think of. One is, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Amazon Payments, but this is something that Amazon set up where you can transfer up to $1,000 per month, and you can link it to a bank account of your choice. If you type in your... Yeah, it effectively is a way to liquidate prepaid cards if you don't want to spend them. You can look up Amazon Payments, Google it, and find out how it works. It does take about 5 minutes to set it up. You have to link your bank account. You have to be comfortable doing that. But I've used this to get rid of numerous prepaid cards, and I've never had a problem. It does work. It doesn't cost you any fees. Another one is called Evolve Money. This is a newer company that you can use a prepaid card to pay bills like, say, PG&E. Some mortgage companies participate in it too, but you can find what bills they pay, and if you have bills that are capable of being paid with Evolve Money, you can just type in the credit card number once you sign up for an Evolve Money account, and you can liquidate the card that way. So there are a couple of solutions. Neither is as nice as just being able to put a check in your bank account, but unfortunately, corporations are going away from that.
Is Evolve, Joe, spelled E-V-O-L-V-E?
Yeah, Evolve Money.
Evolve Money.
Or Amazon Payments. Those are two ways where people can liquidate prepaid cards without having to pay any fees. Amazon Payments, you can do it where you could link your own bank account.
Joe, in light of the story, the abbreviated story that Adrian has given us on this, do you think that there may be the basis of some kind of a misrepresentation or omission of material fact that the business should have given for Adrian? In other words, put her on notice. This is not as simple as you think it might be. Or do you feel that that's just going a little bit too far in my, let's say, effort to be a consumer advocate as a deputy DA?
Yeah. I don't have a basis to make that conclusion because, unfortunately, the reality is most rebate companies, especially for larger rebates, are issuing prepaid cards.
I see.
You don't get the option to get a check. That's unfair to consumers. That's reducing our flexibility. But that is, you know, that's rebates have always been dicey propositions at times, and the company controls the procedure more than we do. The prepaid card thing is not unusual, unfortunately, but there are ways to get the money off. You could also perhaps, you know, I don't know if you buy things, you can sometimes buy prepaid cards with a prepaid card, but that gets kind of complicated.
Yeah,
companies really should give us the option.
One of the waiters told me I could do that. I could go to a Safeway and buy a prepaid card from a company that I do business with. These are really great ideas. I am extremely thankful, and I will do
Well, I hope it works, Adrian.
Yeah, I hope it works out.
Yeah, sometime in the future.
It's crazy, and so this will be much better.
Good. All right. Well, good luck to you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for calling. Are you concerned at all with the Target situation, Joe? Target, what is it? Close to 100 million people were involved with that?
Well, sure, yeah.
It's 70. I guess it was 70 million.
There is really no limit to the number of threats to companies losing track of our personal information or hackers trying to steal it. We just found out about another one today. eBay actually sent out an email saying that our usernames and passwords could have been compromised. We should change our password. Unfortunately, for consumers, you should be aware that, you know, credit cards are safer than debit cards because you have built-in protections under the Fair Credit Billing Act that you don't have when you use debit cards.
Yes.
But you have to stay on top of your accounts in case that fraud does occur because, you know, until we get more, you know, a whole regime of more secure credit cards, which would be chip and signature, or at the very least chip and PIN.
I'm sorry, what are you saying? I'm not following what you mean by that.
Well, you know, the magnetic stripe that's on the back of the credit card is
okay.
one of the reasons that it's so easy for hackers to capture this information.
Yeah.
And, you know, by including extra protections like they do in Europe, such as chip and signature, chip and PIN, I believe, is actually more secure. But either one would be a big improvement on the magnetic stripe without any kind of chip. And companies are starting to roll this out. To Target's credit, they have said that they're going to have their cards embedded with a chip in the near future. So, you know, for the time being, consumers just have to monitor their accounts. You can do so on free services like Mint.com and check to make sure none of your accounts have any funny business going on.
Yeah.
But, it's one of many threats to our privacy and to our financial security, you know, once people get hold of our personal information.
Let me give you the phone number again for your legal rights. If you've been having a problem with a business, if you think you've been ripped off or you think you've been misled or you've been victimized, 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. My guest is Joe Rideout, Manager of Consumer Services for Consumer Action, the nonprofit National Consumer Advocacy and Educational Organization. By the way, Joe, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but KALW's public radio party, where the station for 10 days went out to ask people to contribute to keep this radio station a true public radio station without commercials. It ended on Friday, as a matter of fact. And so I want to thank all of you who contributed during the public radio party over that 10 days. I want to thank all of you who have previously contributed financially to KALW, because I think it's a very, very important asset for this community. As I think you may have heard Matt Martin's recorded message, there are 500 new members, which is really very significant. And I was very pleased in the last couple of weeks where in the last two Wednesdays, Your Legal Rights had its version of the public radio party and was very well responded to. And I'll let you know more specifics about that, I hope, next week in terms of how many of you who contributed to the station asked for either the tenants, California Tenants' Rights book and or the Your Rights in the Workplace. But I do thank you for supporting this non-commercial public radio station. So let me, we've got a number of people who want to talk to you, and let's go with Holly. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
Last September, I got an offer from Verizon in conjunction with Xfinity that if I got a new smartphone with a two-year agreement, I'd get a $100 Visa card.
Hmm.
And so I did everything I was supposed to do, and I've never received it, and I've called them numerous times, and they keep telling me, oh, yeah, here's the order number, and last time I spoke with them in April, they keep saying, well, it's been escalated. It was escalated on January 4th, and there's no one that I can talk to, and I've gotten nothing from them.
Where are you, Holly? What city?
San Francisco.
Yeah. I think if you haven't done this, my suggestion, frankly, and this was an offer by Verizon, is that right?
Well, yes, I think so. It says Verizon Wireless, and then it also has Xfinity on that.
Okay.
And then you have to call Comcast to actually get it started.
All right. What I would suggest you might want to do is contact the San Francisco DA's office, Consumer Protection Unit.
Mm-hmm.
And you may be able to access that on the San Francisco DA's website and file a complaint.
Okay.
Because I'm sure you're not the only person. What I would suggest you also might want to do is contact the Golden Gate Better Business Bureau, which is over in Oakland. You can go on your computer for the Better Business Bureau. and see what kind of complaints there may have been. It may be that there's a potential where the San Francisco DA's office, Consumer Protection Unit, may want to, at the very least, contact Verizon or Comcast or whatever, or maybe both or the three entities, and kind of light a Bunsen burner under them. This has a potential, although Verizon has a, I think, a very fine reputation. You know, I've dealt with companies as a deputy DA for San Mateo County that have fine reputations also that drop the ball. They make misrepresentations, they fail to give full information, and they can find themselves in civil unfair competition lawsuits. So I would suggest you call the DA's office.
I will. Thank you so much for your help.
Yeah, Holly. Thanks very much for calling.
Sure.
Have you had any experience with that, Joe, at all, this Verizon and the $100 Visa card?
Haven't heard of that myself.
Okay.
It wouldn't be the first time that there was a rebate snafu that kept a consumer from getting what they were promised. I think your advice is perfect. I mean, if they're promising that, they better deliver.
Well, I think so, too. I think so, too. All right. We've got Ed. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
I'm a blind individual there, and I wanted to bring to your attention a difficulty that can occur with a chip and pen style card for those of us that are blind. There's no problem with the card itself, but it's the device that reads the card, requiring you to enter that PIN. There is no requirement that that device be accessible to us. We have to tell the clerk our PIN.
Ah.
Now, how private is that?
Oh, my. That's tough.
That's an excellent point, Ed. I had not heard that angle about
that's a tough one.
One of the problems with chip and PIN as it pertains to people visually impaired, and that's a very good point. I hope that they will certainly find out a solution for that.
Well, there's no requirement.
As we embrace new technologies, it makes sense to make sure that everything is in place to serve everyone who's going to be using these devices.
When you get back a statement having used this card, how do you determine what's on the statement, and how do you get the help to determine what charges have been made?
Now, fortunately, the credit card company I use has a telephone system where I enter some specific digits of my credit card.
Yeah.
It checks to see who's calling, says, okay, I see that it's you at your authorized phone number.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can peruse all the transactions on my account.
Yeah.
And so that's not a problem there. And right now I don't have a chip and PIN card because they're not out just yet.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
I'm concerned about the future. I don't use a debit card, for example, for that very reason. And some blindness organizations have sued some major market participants to force them to make their devices accessible. But that would be a slow process to have to sue every single, a vendor out there. But the real issue is that there's no such requirement. And I should point out, too, that most of us that lose our vision lose it later in life and know we do not know Braille.
Yeah.
And so one should not assume that you know how to read Braille dots necessarily.
Yeah.
So the ideal thing would be for that keypad to be arranged in a telephone keypad style, 1, 2, 3,
sure.
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, etc.
Right.
And that they'd be large enough to where you can comfortably put your fingers on there.
Yeah.
In other words, three fingers on there at one time and feel where you are. And, of course, you'd want to cover your hand, I guess, with your other hand.
Oh, sure.
Private.
Oh, God, yes,
and
yeah.
That's an excellent point, Ed. I mean, since we don't have these devices in this country yet, hopefully the manufacturers will take your advice seriously, because it's important that we don't exclude.
Here's my concern. The legal requirements are being placed on the credit card providers that they provide this chip and PIN card. I've heard no one say that the vendors who make the devices that read the card be made accessible. In other words, they're two separate entities completely.
No, you make a very good point.
It's not the banks who sell the those devices that read the cards. Those are other vendors in the marketplace that sell them to each and every market and the department store, et cetera, et cetera.
Ed, what I'm going to suggest, this may be a topic that I want to take up and spend quite some time on in the future, but With regard to what you're talking about, you're talking about what may be the potential for identity theft. And there's a very good paper, actually. It's a number of sheets. It's about 30 sheets in length that the California Attorney General's office put out as of September of last year. I'm going to give the website number or the website address on this. Should you or anybody else become a victim of identity theft, for whatever reason it is, this is an outstanding piece of work that the Attorney General's office has done, and you can find it at www.oag.ca.gov/privacy. OAG, Office of the Attorney General, of course. So it's www.oag.ca.gov/privacy. It's entitled Top 10 Tips for Identity Theft Protection. It's an outstanding piece of work and something that I think everybody should have available to them. We're going to move on, Ed. Thank you very much for telling us about the problems that blind people are confronted with. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye. All right, we've got Pat. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi.
Hi, Pat.
Hi. This is to do with car insurance and our daughter. We were told that we can keep her on our car insurance. She's 26, and she works at minimum wage, and she doesn't live at home. And we have full coverage with an additional $1 million umbrella policy. And we were told to ask a lawyer to find out if we could be sued for everything if she were, God forbid, in such a car accident, And, our insurance company just told us, well, it seems like you can do this. And they told us that we could go ahead and, keep her on our policy, just include her address, but to make sure that we ask a lawyer if we're safe.
Well, this is a very significant question, Pat, that you're asking. And where do you live?
In Berkeley.
Yeah. I think what you need to do, frankly, on this, I think you need to start with contacting the Alameda County Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service and ask if you can have an appointment. I'm not sure what the category would be, whether this is a personal injury attorney who you might want to meet with or what, but this is not something that can be answered to give you an answer you can rely on a radio program.
I see.
So I think what let me give this to you. Here is the Alameda County Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service, or at least the bar number, and then you call them and ask to speak to someone in the Lawyer Referral Service. Are you ready to write?
Yeah.
Okay. 510-302-2222.
Mm-hmm.
510-302-2222. That's what you need to do. You need to, with this kind of information you're getting, where someone's saying you could be sued for everything, you want to get some legal advice on this.
Right.
Face to face with an attorney.
Great.
And what will happen there, and I'm not sure that will give you the kind of security that you need for a half an hour consultation, but you'll be charged $35.
Uh-huh.
And that doesn't go to the lawyer, it goes to the Lawyer Referral Service. So good luck on that.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Bye-bye.
Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. For a referral to a lawyer, you can call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours, 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service. Call your own during normal business hours. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced in the area, set you up for a half an hour consultation, and you'll pay most likely throughout California for a half an hour consultation, anywhere between $25 to $35. It's a great way to get started. So that's what I would suggest. And let's see, Alan, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Hi.
I wanted to know if the cardholder's term of service I have for my debit Visa with a major bank is not reliable, where it says that if I notify them, in writing, best I know, but at least orally, of suspicious activity, as soon as I realize it, they will limit my losses to $50 there. I'm kind of the anxious type, and I hope I'm not misinterpreting you to say that that's not trustworthy. I know it's better to get a credit card, but some of us have some challenges to overcome, and I just want to know if I can trust that, even though the bank isn't required to offer those terms. If they are making that term of service available, can I rely on that policy? As long as they agree that I'd notify them ASAP.
One thing I want to ask you, Alan, on your credit card statement,
debit Visa.
Oh, it's debit Visa.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
What do you say about that, Joe?
Well, Alan, I think in most cases you'll be fine, but you should understand that there are very different legal protections when you use a debit card versus a credit card, and the debit card ones are much weaker. They come under something called the Electronic Fund Transfer Act, different from the Fair Credit Billing Act that governs credit card transactions. And as long as you notify that bank within 2 days after learning of the theft, then you are supposed to be limited to $50, as you say.
Oh, really?
But the problem is, if more than 48 hours have passed, your liability goes up to $500. That would not be the case with the credit card. And if more than 60 days pass, your liability is unlimited.
And so that's the date that I first noticed or should have noticed?
It is supposed to be from when you first notice, but if there's a difference between when you first notice and the time when the theft occurred, that can be a real headache for you, and it can be difficult to prove if the bank really takes a hard line.
Right.
The upshot is that credit cards will make your life much easier if somebody does try to steal your identity or impersonate you and use a credit card that they stole, in a way that with a debit card, your problems will be magnified. For one, you're out that money. It's gone from your account if the thief cleans out your checking account. With a credit card, they'd issue a provisional credit, do an investigation. You wouldn't be out any actual money. But you are correct to say that your losses are limited to $50 as long as you let them know within 2 days. But the problem is after 2 days, it's $500.
Right.
And it can even go up beyond that. So if you have access to both, use the credit card for the online transactions or for the stores you're not quite sure about.
I'm sorry to tell you, we have run out of time. Alan, thank you very much for calling. Joe, I thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Chuck.
It's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Joseph Rideout is Manager of Consumer Services for Consumer Action, the nonprofit national consumer advocacy and educational organization. The website, very valuable website, www.consumer-action.org. Thanks so much, Joe.
Thank you, Chuck.
See you in probably a few months or so.
Hope so.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the San Mateo County Bar Association. Additional funding is provided by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, and the California Applicants Attorneys Association. Next week, we are going to do our Call a Lawyer night. I hope you will join us at 1-800-525-9917. On the air, we'll be dealing with employment law, and the focus will be what can and cannot be asked by an employer in a pre-employment interview. My guests will be employment law attorneys Tom Lenz and Scott Stillman. I hope you will join us then. Thanks so much for listening to Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney.